Welcome to the Humble Hoof Podcast. My name is Alicia Harlov. This is a podcast for both horse owners and hoof care professionals, offering discussions into various philosophies on the health of the hoof and soundness of your horse. Please check us out on Facebook or at thehumblehoof.com. A special thank you to our wonderful sponsor, Cavallo. For our Humble Hoof listeners, they are offering 15% off their Cavallo Trek hoof boots using the coupon code HRN at checkout. The Trek is the world's most popular and versatile hoof boot and Cavallo's toughest trail boot, while also doubling as an option for therapy or rehab. The front closure system makes it easily adaptable to various hoof shapes, and the TPU gaiter allows for maximum strength while minimizing weight for the comfort and ease of movement for your horse. These are recommended by vets and trainers and also loved as transport boots by barrel racers, show jumpers, dressage riders, and everyone in between. Again, for 15% off a pair of Treks, use the code HRN at checkout at cavallo-inc.com. When I was still fairly new in the hoof care world, I started a Facebook group called Barefoot Rehab for Navicular to help support other navicular horse owners. Through that and my friend Beth Lewis, I met Hannah Fox. She had just had a gelding who was diagnosed with navicular and she was looking for ways to help him. It's been amazing following their journey for the last 7+ years and seeing how he went from a diagnosis where Hannah thought she might not even be able to ride him again, to now seeing him back in full work and even how he was jumping and fox hunting last year. I asked Hannah if she wanted to share her story with everybody about what she did to get Leopold sound and how she's maintained it and what they're doing now. Okay, so why don't we start in, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you are involved in the horse world and
Okay, so I train horses. I currently have 2 warm bloods of my own, focusing in natural horsemanship and dressage. I have my bronze medal. My personal horse, Leopold, who has navicular, has been trained up to about 4th level. I've competed him 4th level. And we stepped away from the dressage world for a little bit while I've had children, and we fox hunted last year.
Oh, awesome. I don't think I realized that you did that.
Yeah, it was really fun.
That's really cool. Yeah, so obviously, you know, that's kind of what I wanted to talk about today was Leopold and your journey with him, because it's a super interesting story and it's how I met you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, when he started having hoof issues and like what his symptoms were and what you noticed?
So Leopold was shod when I got him and he started, you know, having little moments of being off. We thought he was getting hot nailed, and I think he did get hot nailed a few times. At the time, the farrier that was doing him would pull his shoes and go, oh, yep, there was a hot nail here or there. So we thought it was that for a while. And then he just wasn't really getting better. His hooves were kind of a mess. Lots of like growth rings on them. Looking back at the pictures now and knowing what I do now, it was quite horrifying to see the shape of his hooves. But then he did get the navicular diagnosis. The vet recommended, you know, therapeutic shoeing, as they do, as well as different injections and, you know, to keep him moving. And we started with, he had one off-class injection, I think, before I met you. And you said, well, have you thought about, you know, the barefoot approach? And you sent me, you know, a bunch of different literature to read. I think one of them was, oh gosh, Foot First or Hoof First?
Feet First by Nick Barker.
Yeah, Feet First. I own that book. It's still on my bookshelf. And that really kind of got me into thinking more of like, why don't we try barefoot? So, you know, my vet was not super keen on the idea, but did agree that we could try it. And if it didn't work, then, you know, what's it hurting? I'm not going to push it. I was very willing to give him an entire year, regrow an entire new hoof. And we hired, through your references, I hired Beth Lewis from Equibalance Farrier Services. And, you know, we took our time with the rehab. We did, I think I did laser treatment for part of his healing from his deep digital flexor tendon injury, you know, proper mineral balancing with Vermont Blend, and, you know, proper hoof trims through Beth. And we got there.
Yeah. So when you were first having the vet look at him, I know you talked about like maybe there were hot nails and stuff, but was his navicular diagnosed with radiographs or did you have an MRI? You did have an MRI, right?
We did have an MRI, yes. So he was diagnosed with radiographs and, of course, I think hoof testers as well at the time. This was 7 years ago. And then we did go forward with the MRI. Dr. Andy Canapps was my vet for this lameness, and he suggested I do an MRI. He's great, and this advice stuck with me now. Even to this day, he said, you know, you should, if you want to go the MRI route, you could get an MRI. It could be very helpful in healing. And he said, shop around, call, you know, all the clinics that have an MRI machine and find what's the most affordable for you and, you know, get it done. And we did get a little bit more information on what was injured with the MRI, but I don't necessarily, and I'll say this to clients too, when their horses come up lame, is if you don't have the funds for it, it's not something that's so prudent. You know, time is your best friend when it comes to healing. It was great to have the information as to what exactly was damaged and how damaged it was, but I don't think that it made a huge difference, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I got, you know, with my gelding Vinny, who has navicular issues and was diagnosed with navicular, you know, 11 years ago, we got an MRI and it was very expensive. And as grateful as I am to, like you said, have that information, it didn't change ultimately what we did in terms of approach. Yeah. And, you know, you spend all this money and you just basically have more of a diagnosis. It doesn't actually, like, the money doesn't help with the treatment. It's just,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
But I mean, I will say, like, I'm super thankful that, you know, I was able to get the MRI, and it's also helpful, I think, when I'm talking to people about Vinny, to be able to say, well, we do know for sure what was going on in the foot, and, yeah, you know, he's doing so much better. So look at what we, like, how far you can come. So that's really nice too. But yeah, so like, I forgot, I remember you had said that you had gotten an MRI. So that showed, you said that he had a DDFT injury as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And you could see the lollipopping on his navicular bone as well through the radiographs.
Yeah. And I mean, I think when I met you, you had not even gotten the MRI yet. So then was that like intermittent lameness, do you think, with the soft tissue injury? Or was he consistently lame by the time you got the MRI?
He had been consistently lame. It was a very mild lameness. For a time, I could feel it under saddle, but it wasn't really visible to the people on the ground. So it was pretty consistent, and we had already decided, you know, he was going to have some time off, but the MRI was just kind of an extra step on, you know, what exactly is going on. Because in the boarding situation where we were in training with another trainer, you know, it was helpful to know, you know, this is the lameness we're dealing with, it needs time, you know. And one of the things that I found was interesting too was he had the navicular diagnosis, and the standard protocol was, well, we'll inject him, we'll put therapeutic shoes on, and you can keep going. But having that extra diagnosis, the tool of having an MRI, made it like, well, it's not just navicular. There are other injuries here, and giving him time makes sense, you know? So I think that the MRI was helpful in distinguishing, like, yeah, he has navicular, but the navicular is probably also caused by other soft tissue injuries.
Right. Yeah. And that's the thing too, is I feel like so many horses probably have, I mean, corresponding soft tissue injuries, but because the MRI is often out of reach financially, they're not often treated as if they have soft tissue injuries. So that's another thing that, you know, I'll tell owners if they have a navicular case, is just treat them as if they do have a soft tissue injury, even if you don't have the MRI, because you're not going to hurt your horse by going slower or by, you know, resting an injury, but you could hurt them by doing too much if they have it and you don't know about it.
Absolutely.
So in terms of, I know you like briefly talked about diet and reaching out to Beth, but what was sort of like your first step once you decided to do a rehab approach?
So, you know, you had put the bug in my ear, like, you can rehab barefoot. And I was trying to, at the time, figure out what foods he should be on. And I was kind of lost in that field. And I know you helped kind of direct me, because I think at the time, which is horrifying, I'm looking back at it, but I had him on like oats and pulp, and you were like, oh, like, no, that's not quite it. So I was trying to break down back to like more simple feed strategies. I think a vet or somebody had said to me like, oh, well, you should just try oats. You know, we pulled away from that, went to the forage-based nutrition Facebook group, which recommended beet pulp, Timothy pellet. For some horses, alfalfa was okay. And you had said like some horses are okay on soybean meal, but some aren't. So play with that and sensitivities. Now I have all of my horses, regardless of health issues and statuses, they're all on beet pulp with Timothy pellets and Vermont blend. And that seems to be like a really basic, safe food for them to be on. Leo has a couple of extra health issues as time has gone on. He just recently was also diagnosed with PPID, and he had 15 teeth extracted recently for the equine odontoclastic 2-3 absorption and hypercementosis. So I'm grateful to also be feeding them the forage-based diet because that's also safe for him with his PPID. So I treat all of my horses the same now since Leo's navicular diagnosis, but they all eat a very safe diet for every health ailment.
Yeah, and how old is he? Is he, for some reason in my head, he's not super old.
He's 19 now.
Oh, okay. So like he's getting up. I mean, that's still like young nowadays when you think about horses, but that makes sense with the PPID diagnosis then, because I guess I have known you for, or like known of you, I guess, for like the 7-ish years. And he was younger then. So I mean, I guess horses age.
Oh my God, they get old so quickly.
I know. It's so funny. And my own navicular gelding is 18 now. And it's so weird to me because he does not seem old in my mind. It's just so funny that they can, you know, like time goes by too fast. Absolutely. Yeah. So did you, I know you talked about changing the diet. Did you pull shoes right away? Did you like use boots and pads, or like what was your approach to his feet during that time?
So I think when Beth started him, then this was 7 years ago, so like my memory might be failing me. We may have kept him in shoes for a cycle, but I do remember her coming out and she said, well, we're going to have to do them every 2 weeks. And I said, okay. And she was kind of like, I think she was kind of testing me, like, you know, how committed are you to this? Because this is like, you're not just pulling this horse's shoes and we're going to watch him be lame, right? Yeah. So she was like, he might need to be done every 2 to 3 weeks. And I said, okay. And she said, we're going to, like, you need to, you know, be really strict on his diet. And like, if his feet start falling apart, let me know. But I'm going to come every 2 weeks. And all right, sure. So after either a month or right away, we had pulled shoes. He came, just like she said, every 2 weeks. We stayed on top of it, and we did a couple of different fun things. I remember her using like balance pads to see, you know, where he liked to kind of shift his weight. We played with like, you know, different wedges and tools he had in her toolkit just to kind of see where he liked to kind of rest himself. I'm trying to think, I did do boots and pads in the beginning. I liked the easy care epics because they were a little bit more rigid on the bottom, like they didn't have the flexibility that some other hoof boots do. And I used their 12 millimeter, the red, I think they're like the heavier or hard pads, but they're fairly cushiony. I liked that for him at first because it still created some stability, like the boot itself wasn't flexing. And I rehabbed him mostly in those. And then as he became sound, I switched him into scoop boots for work and riding.
Yeah, and I remember too, I think I saw some pictures or videos of you doing some shows and you had his feet casted for shows, right? Because you can't you couldn't do boots with the shows.
Yep. So that was my hack for the show ring. And I think actually Beth ended up coming to that show. It was at GMHA. It was our first show back. I believe I was competing him third or fourth level, but I kept the same pads that I had in his boots. And I just used regular casting material, like the 3M casting material you can get for like casting a broken arm. I bought some of that online and I, you know, kind of played with practicing casting his foot in with this pad on the bottom. And I found that that was fine for, you know, regular arena footing. Wasn't slippery or anything. And it you know, kept him happy in his regular booted riding situation.
Yeah. And so how quickly would you say did it take him to become comfortable or sound?
From the day he was diagnosed with navicular to the day that he came sound was about 8 months. I imagine it could be different for everyone. I actually have his MRI report in front of me and I can read all of the things if you would like me to.
Yeah, sure.
The MRI found he had mild to moderate synovitis, distal interpharyngeal joint left four, mild to moderate enlargement of the synovial invaginations and mild and moderate fluid of the navicular bone. Let's see, mild to moderate distal phalanx left four. So this is all on his left four because that's where the MRI was. Navicular bursitis left four, mild deep digital flexor tenopathy. Oh my gosh, there's so many. Mild to moderate desmopathy, medial collateral ligament of the distal interpharyngeal joint. You're going to regret having me read all these.
So there's a lot of, yeah, it sounds like there's just a lot of soft tissue and bone involvement in the left front.
Yeah, medial suspensory ligament and lateral suspensory ligament were both also injured. So there was quite a bit going on in his hoof. It wasn't just, you know, navicular, which I feel like is like the easy diagnosis that kind of blankets all of these potential soft and soft tissue injuries as well.
Yeah. And that's amazing. I mean, 8 months to me makes a lot of sense, not only because soft tissue injuries can take, I mean, they can take up to 18 months to fully heal, but because in 8 months, you typically have a whole new hoof capsule growth. And a lot of times if you're changing the diet, that can help to reduce the inflammation in the hoof capsule. So if you're reducing that and growing in a whole new hoof, then it's a better stable hoof to support the internal structures. But that's just so cool. And then, you know, after that 8 months where he came up sound, did you have any setbacks? Did you have any times when he came up lame again, or was he pretty much sound from then on?
I think he was pretty much sound from then on. He may have had like a few moments here and there where, you know, I would immediately pump the brakes and say, you know, I'm just going to give him another week or two. Like I feel something a little bit off, but I think by the 8 month mark, that was pretty much clearing up. We were kind of getting back to work and just kind of playing with, you know, how much work can he handle? For a long time, I didn't even jump him. I think I started jumping him 6 years out. So last year was the first time I was like, no, he's been sound for 6 years. Like,
yeah,
he always enjoyed it. My plan with him at some point was to event. So I would, you know, when he had the navicular setback, I was, you know, I kind of gave up on that dream. And then, you know, 6 years later, I was like, well, he really liked jumping. And, you know, it would be fun to do if he can hold up to it. And he did.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so you fox hunted with him?
Yes, I fox hunted with him last year.
That's so cool. And so what does he do now? Like, I know, obviously, he just had all those teeth removed. So he's probably, you know, I know that during that time, maybe you weren't doing like a ton of stuff, but what has he done recently, or what do you plan to do with him? Are you still fox hunting him? Are you are you showing?
We're not showing right now. I bought a home recently. I had kids. I brought him home. I would love to potentially show again in the future. We'll see with having 15 teeth removed, including all 12 incisors in the front of his mouth, if his tongue's sticking out, unfortunately.
Aww.
And that's one of the things I really hate about the dressage world and the show world is, you know, the strict parameters around what you can have on hooves. So the casting, I got around that. But with him having his teeth removed, if his tongue's sticking out of his mouth, it's not worth putting him in the dressage ring. I will get, you know, torn apart, unfortunately, by judges that stand that he doesn't have incisors to hold his tongue in his mouth. So my plan with him and what I'd love to continue to do with him is to fox hunt. You know, a friend of mine pulled me into it last year saying, like, it's a great mommy outing. And he loved it. Like, he so enjoyed it. It was so nice being out with other horses. He had fun. You know, we got to ride through some really interesting things. And I like, you know, I've talked to a lot of people about, like, you should come out and try it. And people are like, they're crazy. Like, you know, you've got to be crazy to fox hunt. But there are some really confident horses because you're chasing after other horses that are also very confident. So I've enjoyed my time doing that with him, kind of getting out into nature, riding with other people. We have tea time after. He's been really happy in the fox hunting world. So I'm hoping to kind of keep him in that for the foreseeable future. And again, it, you know, kind of plays into, there's a lot of different terrain that we're riding over. You know, there's gravel, there's rivers and streams and stuff you're kind of going through. So I'm still working on finding the most effective hoof protection for fox hunting. I have tried him in boots. I just upgraded to the mud straps for the scoop boots to see if maybe that would hold well. I did end up after one of my hunts last year going for a nice run after our ride to go retrieve one of my scoop boots that got stuck out in the mud. But but we're working on, you know, just finding what works for fox hunting. It's a new endeavor for us.
Yeah, and when you say fox hunting, is it it's a dragged scent?
Yes, it's a drag scent.
I was going to say.
There are typically one or two horses that ride out in front of the hounds and the rest of the riders and kind of spray a scent around. That's most of what we do in New England. I don't believe that there are any legitimate hunts. They're all drag hunts.
Okay, that's what I thought. Because I know in England, like when I mentioned when I went over there that we do fox hunting in our area, everyone was like, oh my goodness, that's so inhumane. But like we don't actually hunt foxes. So
no. Most of them are drag hunts, including, so Wentworth Hunt Club here in New Hampshire is a drag hunt, as well as Myopia in Massachusetts.
Yeah. Yeah. And until I moved, I lived right near Myopia and I still work with some Myopia horses and they're, it's like you said, the dragged scent. So. Mm-hmm. Awesome. That's so great. And so when you, just so I can like make sure that I'm giving the right information, when you say that you were, you know, showing him again after his diagnosis, what level did you get up to in dressage for after the diagnosis?
I ended up competing him fourth level, test 3 after the diagnosis. He held up to it incredibly well. My plan at that time had been, you know, to do pre-St. George with him. We were getting close. He has his tempies. He has, you know, all the stuff except the pirouettes were very hard for him. I think it's more of a personality thing than anything. You know, I ended up buying a home and having children, and that, you know, was kind of a setback for us. You know, it did slow me down in the showing career and the riding. I took a decent break after having my first child. So we kind of stepped away from that a little bit. Yeah, absolutely. but he did compete up to fourth level. I think that he could keep going. But just, you know, the change in tides of my own life kind of took us into a different route lately, and you know, he, last year I had him jumping up to about 3 feet and he's stayed sound, and I think that's a testament in itself, because you know, I feel like if I had gone the more old school traditional route of shoeing him and injecting him to keep him acting sound, then I wouldn't have the horse that I have today.
Yeah, and you mentioned that you have another warm blood. Is that one barefoot too?
He is, yes. I have a 13-year-old chestnut, same bloodline as Leo. He is a Londonderry baby, just like Leopold is, and I got him from Leopold's breeder. He is, you know, doing a little bit of dressage here and there. I've hopped him over some stuff, but he is barefoot as well, on the same diet that Leo's on. As I said, I keep all of my horses on that diet. I'm hoping to kind of get him out more in the coming seasons. He's a little bit fresh and spicy as a redhead is. but he's a good boy too. Yes, he's also barefoot.
That's awesome. And are you still working with Beth? Because I see so many videos of you trimming your guys. Do you trim your own now?
I do trim my own now. One of the things that Beth and I worked with when we were rehabbing Leo and she encouraged me to do was to trim and learn to trim on my own, for the reason that she said, you know, you could figure out what he's most comfortable with. Sometimes you might trim a little bit too much bar, or, you know, he might like a little bit more heel. He might like, you know, a little bit of the hoof wall left for support. So she did encourage me to play with trimming and learn how to trim. I did come to one of the Pete Ramey clinics that you had as well with Leo a number of years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, just learn how he likes to be trimmed. So I do trim my own horses now. I have for, gosh, probably the last 6 years. And if I ever run into anything that's questionable, I do call Beth. She's always been a great mentor for me. I remember when I brought my chestnut home a couple of years ago, he had what looked like negative palmar angles in his hind feet. And I spotted it when I went to, you know, do a pre-purchase on him and bring him home. And I remember calling Beth and saying, hey, I have a new horse. I want you to come look at him. I want your opinion on, you know, what I should be doing to fix this. I have an idea, but I, you know, would love some support because obviously, you know, you and her are way more knowledgeable than myself, who just trims my own horses. I don't see as much. So she came out and she looked at him and said, you know, this is how I would approach changing these angles. And he, you know, has a thin sole in the back. So she's continued to support me in my hoof journey with all of my horses as a mentor.
Yeah, she's amazing. And she, I think you know this, but she was Vinny's first farrier when I got him in 2013, 2014. And she, I mean, to this day is still such a great mentor for me. And I still ask her questions all the time. And we chat a lot about hoof stuff. So she is great. So shout out to Beth Lewis.
Absolutely.
Awesome. All right. I mean, those are like the main questions that I was thinking of, but yeah, do you have any like last minute advice for owners who are maybe going through a difficult hoof diagnosis or who kind of, you know, are looking for some hope of what to do with their horses that might have navicular issues?
Well, I always tell them to reach out to you or find your podcast.
I
also tell people too, like, if you want to go the barefoot route, like you're probably, and you might run into other professionals, other farriers and vets who are against it. And, you know, you have to do your research on the topic. There's plenty of new science out. There's plenty of documentation of this working. And, you know, just have the confidence and give your horse the time. You know, that's a lot of injuries are time.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Have a great rest of your night.
You too. Bye, Alicia.
Bye. I always say that I'm slightly more hoof obsessed than the average person, and chances are, if you're listening to a hoof care podcast, you are too, so we should probably be friends. Feel free to find me on Facebook or email me at thehumblehoof@gmail.com.